From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The annual meeting of the Southeast Conference opened in Sitka today. The three-day event is the largest gathering of regional government and business leaders. Over 400 attendees packed Sitka's Harrigan Centennial Hall, beginning to pour over ideas for economic growth in Southeast and to air their grievances against a governor whom they feel doesn't understand the people or the region. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Welcome to this special in a beautiful place.
That's Sitka Mayor Gary Paxton welcoming the Southeast Conference to the community. Paxton is a former municipal administrator in Sitka and a veteran of many Southeast conferences. He wasted little time in setting the tone for this year's meeting. In fact, it took him only 35 seconds to get to the point.
It is a shame that our administration does not understand the importance of our place here in Southeast Alaska. It's a national treasure. And part of that is our ability to interact with each other, specifically the Alaska Marine Highway System.
The Southeast Conference was founded 58 years ago to help establish the state ferry system. This is the first time in its history that the conference has had to reckon with a governor who would close it down completely as of October 1st. The legislature didn't let that happen, but the system still took a 30% cut to maintain limited service over the winter, leaving many communities in Southeast and Prince William Sound without a ferry for months. The transportation crisis crosses political and cultural lines in Southeast. Lisa Way, with the Sitka Tribe of Alaska, used her opening remarks to call out short-sighted politics.
There's a saying in our culture that when you give something to somebody, do not see me standing here, but the people that have gone before me and the people that are coming after me.
Richard Peterson, who lives in Kasan and heads the Tlingit and Haida Central Council, made the same point, but in the language of economics rather than culture.
You know, the health and vitality of our communities have been grown dependent on this system, and I think it's something that we should really come together on and work on, because I don't think that some of our communities are going to be able to survive without this ferry system that we love, we enjoy, that does benefit all of, not just Southeast Alaska, but Alaska. And there's plenty of economic studies that prove that.
The first morning session wrapped up with remarks from Sitka Senator Bert Stedman, who co-chairs the Senate Finance Committee. With his hands on the purse strings of the operating budget, Stedman has taken some heat for allowing the ferries to fall victim to Governor Dunleavy's draconian funding approach. Stedman, however, told the conference that because the governor needed only 16 votes in the legislature to block any attempt to override a veto, that it was a stronger play politically to protect K-12 education funding rather than sink the ferries in a losing veto battle.
And that was the underlying impetus I had in my office to sit on the other side of the table from all your other elected officials in Southeast dealing with the Marine Highway. Why I was not, as the operating budget chairman of the Senate, going to put a full loaded Marine Highway budget in front of this governor, because it would have been suicide for the Marine Highway system, in my opinion.
On the recent closing of the Marine Highway route to Prince Rupert, British Columbia, Stedman also had an opinion.
From my office and my perspective, I want Prince Rupert more than I want Bellingham.
Stedman hoped that Prince Rupert could be reintegrated into the ferry system and suggested that a $2 million supplemental appropriation already passed and signed into the budget could help resolve the disagreement between the Department of Transportation and U.S. Customs that forced the shutdown of the port. But we can't control the DOT. They're another branch of government, said Stedman. But I'm sure we can have some love language to encourage them to work through the issues. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska cruise ship visitors are expected to break new records for the fifth straight year. That's according to an industry trade group whose projections for 2020 were announced Wednesday at Southeast Conference in Sitka. Melanie Shivens of Raincoast Data said that at least 1.44 million passengers are expected next season.
So that's an increase of 6%, so not the huge increase that we saw in 2019, but still a really healthy growth in terms of total number of passengers coming to the region.
Between 2018 and 2019, cruise ship traffic increased by around 200,000 passengers across Southeast Alaska. Next year, 10 new ships and 29 additional port calls are expected. The top destinations are Juneau, Ketchikan, and Skagway, but the biggest leap will be for Hoonah, whose private Icy Strait Point tourist attraction is expected to more than double its visitors over the next 2 years. The projections come from Cruise Lines International Association. The figures are for passengers and do not include crew. Alaska port calls account for about 5% of cruise traffic globally. Southeast Alaska's timber industry continues to struggle with limited supply and the fallout from the U.S. trade war with China. The sector continued to shrink last year with around 340 jobs working in logging. Total earnings last year were just shy of $19 million. That's according to economic data released Wednesday at the conference. Viking Lumber Vice President Bryce Dahlstrom.
The Chinese government targeted spruce with a 25% tariff. And a lot of farther north, the makeup of the timber is predominantly spruce.
The U.S. Forest Service's second in command in Alaska told the crowd that the federal government is working to open up more of Tongass National Forest to logging. Deputy Regional Forester Jerry Ingersoll says there's currently 50 million board feet under contract for logging. Of that, 15 million is old growth trees that the region's sawmills rely on.
That's not nearly enough. Our business partners depend on a stable, reliable, predictable supply. They'd like to have 2 or 3 years worth of timber under contract in order for them to make investments and sound business decisions, at least. And this is less than a year's worth of supply.
To boost supply, Ingersoll says the U.S. Forest Service has changed the way it does its environmental review. It has begun what it calls a landscape-level analysis. The review reveals potential work and activities rather than specific plans for the public to comment on. This approach has been controversial, as critics say the lack of detail makes it difficult for meaningful public comment. A project on Prince of Wales Island is being challenged in court by conservationists. The Norwegian Joy did not elicit much happiness in Haines last week. The megaship entered Chilkat Inlet to view Rainbow Glacier, ruffling some gillnetters and causing other residents to vent frustrations on social media. But as KHNS's Claire Strempel reports, industry was willing to compromise.
Dan Kendrina is a Haines fisherman. His 72-hour gillnet opener was interrupted last week by the Norwegian Joy cruising the narrow passage of the Chilkat Inlet. That's also the northernmost line of the local fishery.
So when it came through, obviously there was a lot of commotion, and it's hard to maneuver around all those boats.
He says the 1,000-foot megaship threaded between two small boats in an inlet that was crowded with fishermen.
She narrowly avoided both of our nets. I was able to maneuver my boat out of the way.
Cruise ships don't need permission to sightsee in these waters, and they alerted the borough beforehand. But that message didn't get to gillnetters like Kendrina, who were caught off guard. That's because they expect big ships to be in what are called track lines. Those are agreed-upon routes so that small fishing vessels can coexist with cruise liners. There are no track lines in the Chilkat Inlet.
To assume that we would move out of the way, that we should pull our nets up for them, is, I think, a little bit of a bold and arrogant assumption.
Kendrina is not the only fisherman who doesn't want to pull his nets for a few hours during his fishing window. He wants more communication between cruise ships and fishermen. Max Warhatch runs USAG, the United Southeast Alaska Gillnetters. He says the message from the cruise industry has been clear.
When it comes to communicating with them, they haven't given us a lot of, you know, leeway, like, no, we won't come, or we will come when it's closed, or anything like that. They've always been pretty much just going to go do it. So look out.
He says this kind of tight maneuvering is a hazard to fishermen. He expects more of these situations as cruise ship traffic in Alaska increases.
And so when you start thinking about that, it's over the long term, it's going to actually start having an impact on our livelihoods. And I don't know how we're going to deal with that yet.
He was told the ship had plans to be back during the gillnet opener this week. But in this case, there was an easy fix. Rick Erickson is head of operations for Cruise Line Agencies for Alaska, which manages shore operations for cruise ships in the state. He says they were unaware of the opening and the number of fishermen in the inlet, so they won't route ships that way any longer.
Once it was found out that there was going to be another opening this week in that same area, they elected to look for alternatives. The fishermen can have their spot in the bay there to do what they do.
He says the pilots, cruise ship companies, and his agency understood the concerns of the fishermen. They were happy to make the change and cede the inlet in this case. Reporting in Haines, I'm Claire Strempel.
Family members of a Palmer man shot and killed in December say they've had to wait nearly 9 months for the release of his body from a funeral home. KTUU reports the family of Julian Myers was told it could not schedule a funeral until full payment had been made to the Anchorage-based Jansen Funeral Homes. Myers' funeral has been scheduled for Friday, and the funeral home lowered the bill from more than $17,000 to $3,500 after the television station made inquiries into the dispute. Jansen Funeral Homes owner Scott Jansen denies claims made by the family that the company held the body hostage or threatened to dispose of the body if the family didn't pay by a specified date. Myers was shot and killed December 24th. A son is charged in the case. And finally, a pastor wearing a spaghetti strainer on his head delivered the opening invocation at the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly meeting yesterday. The invocation by the pastor of the Homer Congregation of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster is the second non-traditional invocation before the assembly since a court ruling. Kenai radio station KSRM reports the pastor, Barrett Fletcher, invoked the true inebriated creator of the universe to rouse himself and use his noodly appendages to ground each assembly member in their seats. In June, a member of the Satanic Temple opened the assembly meeting, prompting a walkout and protest. The Alaska Supreme Court last October ruled the borough's policy of limiting invocations at the board meetings to those from official organizations with an established presence on the peninsula was unconstitutional. The pastor ended the prayer with Amen. And looking at the National Weather Service forecast for the Juneau Borough and Northern Admiralty Island tonight, rain. Rain may be heavy at times, lows around 50. Southeast winds to 30 miles per hour. Thursday, widespread rain showers, highs in the mid-50s, southwest winds to 10 miles per hour. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, September 18th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.